afternoon to all of you. Welcome to Sabbath services with you on the webcast. Good to be with you again. We're at about 40 days today. My husband's 43 days since I've been here. Quite a while. 40 days is a worthwhile study, by the way. So I look at that. It's interesting to see it time and time again. Congratulations. Still trying to get it straightened out?
Yeah.
Right, maybe there it is. Okay. There we go. As I was saying 143 days ago when I was here on the Feast of Trumpets, I was speaking, and towards the end of the sermon, things were getting a little hazy to my mind. What was on the page wasn't real clear, and I had a page to go. And something needed to be done, so I wrapped it up, and I said, come with me, come with me. I heard some of you didn't want to go quite then. That's good. Glad that that's the case. Well, I stumbled off the stage, slithered into a chair over here. Some men helped me to the back area where we have the classroom. And I sat down, not quite sure what was wrong. I've had some diabetic conditions from time to time. My A1C is pretty respectable. And I didn't think it was diabetes, but I thought perhaps that's all it was. And thankfully, we have four nurses and a physician in the room. Dr. Burkle and his volunteer staff came readily to the aid, and they moved me and asked me to go to the floor. So I laid on the floor, and they commenced to try to find equipment so that I could check my blood pressure. I couldn't find a good blood cup. They couldn't find a good diabetic test set. And I'm the kind of guy that was always in control. So I said, Tina, take a note. We need to get this kind of equipment here and make sure it's always readily available. I knew I'd be up in no time at all. But my heart rate was 20. And they could not, Dr. Burkle could not find the pulse. I had no pulse. So in his mind, I was a daughter. Now, when the nurses heard some of that, one of them, Tammy Hannaway, grabbed my wife and was holding her. And so Joy grabbed her and held on to her. And she thought maybe Tammy needed comforting. Tammy was comforting Joy because as a nurse, she saw how desperate the situation was. Joy had no experience with me dying. She's had experience with me for 40-something years. And I do throw a wheel once in a while and need a spare tire, but she had not anticipated that. I asked to be anointed, and with some difficulty, Mr. Hannaway anointed corrected me. His knees not quite obeying his mind. But he did anoint me. As the Bible says in that instruction, when one is not well. And they wondered if I wanted an ambulance, and I said, well, yes. I'm on the floor, and I'd like to get up, and I know that the laws of the land say that when someone can't operate precisely, that you call an ambulance when you're in a public place. So I was not thinking about myself as much as you, that we need to make sure you're protected from any kind of sin. You know, maybe it'd be me suing myself. I don't know. I am the pastor. Well, they ambulanced me away, and soon after getting into the ambulance, they started to undress me. I'm not used to that from other foreigners. They stuck an IV in me and said, here, this will help you. I didn't know how, but they immediately put two pads on my chest. And these are external pacers to keep things rolling in the right direction. And I could feel the thumps in a way that I will never forget. The electricity coming into my body to promote circulation was astounding. It was scary. It was like sticking your finger in a 110. And I drifted off to nowhere land. And from what I understand from Joy, this as faithful a companion any man will ever find, she tells me that the trip to the hospital and then laying in a bed, they're in a pre-op area for 2.5 hours, was kept alive by electricity and drugs. And the staff there were very complete in their, and diligent in their work, checking their monitors, checking their drip systems, checking everything, so that they could know that this fellow was going to be okay. Whatever okay is. At the time, after those 2.5 hours were ending, I was brought back to enough consciousness that they told me I was going to be wheeled into a hospital room. And an operating room, rather, and I would be getting a pacemaker. And that Dr. Shohan, whom I know is my cardiac guy, I've had some AFib forever, would be tending to me. And I said, I want to talk to him before I go in there. So they kept me just outside these doors, and as the time came to go in and the doctor was there, he said, you wanted to see me. I said, yes. He said, you know about all the things I got wrong with me. What are you going to do? Why don't you just let me go? Somehow along in that point, I was starting to hash things through and realized I had a desperate situation. But I wanted to talk to the doctor. He explained to me that all these other things wrong with you, I can't do that. But what's causing this right now, I can fix that with a pacemaker. You'll be okay. And so I looked up to Joy and I said, well, Joy, what should I do? She says, I'd like to keep you around a little while longer. He didn't define how long that is. But she did define that she wanted me. Well, they did install a pacemaker, and there followed a week's hospitalization. Now, some of you from the Zephyr Hills area sat with Joy, and I thank you for that. Deeply thank you. There's many times in life when people don't really think they need something. And my wife, Joy, is an astounding woman. She's very strong, very capable, beyond me in some areas. very converted, knows her Bible, knows spiritual thoughts deeply. She doesn't really need people sometimes, but I thank you for being with her. That was very comforting to her. And I would just say, if you ever see someone in that kind of a mode, a problem, and they say, I don't need anybody, don't take them at that first word. Think about what you can do in spite of what they're going through. And it might only be sitting quietly. It might be going out with them for a sandwich. But the comfort of knowing there's someone else around is vital. So thank you to those who followed through. And after I was recovering in the hospital room, someone who came around with cheese and fruit plates. And I also found some friends bringing in bags of stuff and pulling the curtain, and they had a party, and they brought me French water, and they were all partying. Now, you know part of that story, and I'm trying to tell you all of it as I know of it, but there's a part you don't know. And that's when my day began. I'm somewhat regimented in my life. I get up pretty much at the same hour every morning. I make sure my prayer is there. And in that prayer is a request for many of you and others that I pastor here. I'm concerned about you, and so I talk to God about you. I prepare myself for the day. I spend some time in personal repentance of things that I know and things that I don't know of myself. And in that particular day of trumpets, that feast day, I spent time in my mind and in thought with God about the sermon that I would be delivering, because I see myself as a vessel. And what I went through proves again that you're not around for all time. I'm not going to be here forever and ever. But my goals of the day were to bring peace and to help you look forward. So I prepared that sermon and did the going through the thoughts of hope, trying to instill within you the matter of hope. I wanted there to be a good clarity to everything. And that's what escaped me, clarity. I couldn't control it. I couldn't control anything after a while. And so I went through 3 operations in 3 months, all of them critical, necessary, and fully put under operations. I spent about 3 weeks in the hospital. In all of that time, and then coming back, I've asked myself, continuing question that I find continuing answers to. I ask myself, why do I have life? That is a question for you that you need to know the answer to. You must know why you have life. There are lessons that I learned, and I want to serve you in some of the understanding that has come to me. I find in the first 3 verses of 2 Corinthians 5, three answers. It happened in somewhat of an order to what I have been through. The first verse, 2 Corinthians 5, says, we know that if this life we live here on earth is ever taken down like a tent, we still have a building from God. It is an eternal house in heaven that isn't made by human hands. And so I now wear something that isn't made by me. Hands are put together pacemaker that's been installed. And it's flicking around real good. But more importantly, my inner being isn't made by human hands. And that day, I was willing to let the whole world pass. That's why I was telling the doc. I felt my life had been complete. If there was ever a day that I felt that my progress was complete and I was trying to set myself right before God, it was on that piece of trumpets. I felt from the time that I prayed in the morning to the time that I stumbled off the stage, I had done everything I possibly could to be right with my Maker. Now, I know it wasn't a perfect day. And certainly the Maker knows that. But there was, on all of my activities, the desire to please my Father in heaven and His Son Christ, who will come and reign over us and give us eventually our own crowns. So as this God's Word translation says that I'm reading from, I felt that the tent was coming down. Every one of us, I think, have put up a tent. We put down the stakes. We then erect the poles. And that's the difficult part. But finally, we get the thing, what we call square. And when it's square, then we can go in, put in the sleeping bags, our suitcase full of stuff, the ice chest so the bear doesn't get it. And we are ready to go. But when you leave, and the tent comes down, you know how quickly that goes. It is nothing as difficult as compared to putting it up. It comes down quickly, you know, roll it up, put it in its bag, and off you go. Pack it in the car, the truck, and down the road. I felt my tent was being put down. So if you ever live life in that final moment and you see that, realize there's something ahead that is not made by human hands. And so the first thing that I have learned from this is learn to live each day as if it were the last. Live each day as if it were the last. Now, if you will follow that instruction, every day you live from here forward will be a better day. Because there are days that you have lived and that I have lived where I didn't think it was my last day. And I've let hell take care of me through the day. And I've gone to bed with foul attitudes. I've gone through the day thinking wrong thoughts. I've started the day without bringing God into my life. And you've done the same thing. But if you will remember to live each day as if it were your last, you will start it right. And through the day, you will do things that you remember will be part of your judgment. That's a very important lesson. So I went through that first operation and was given a pacemaker. And I found my tent was still erect. One of the last things I went through in there was having another catheterization, looking over the heart. They've looked at me every way possible. I've even had three young and small ladies with different sonoscopes in their hands look at my chest and get that the doctors a 3D view of my heart. They could spin it around in the computer and look at it all over. I was amazed at what they can do. But I don't have any blockages. I don't have need of stents. my cholesterol's good. My heart is good for, it's the age of my heart is the age that I am. Got a young heart, but it's not an old heart either. Go to some of your hearts. So as long as my tent's up, I'm going to be living each day as if it were my last. Now the second point is in the next verse. In our present tent-like existence, we sigh, since we long to put on the house that we will have in heaven. We want a spirit body. What they found out when they gave me the pacemaker, and it might be a redundant situation, but I've got it and they're not going to take it out. What they found was that my aorta valve was shot. In most of our hearts, our aorta valve is 3 leaf. Some of you have 2, they say. None of you, they say, have 4 leaves. But there are these pieces of flesh that go up and down and hold the blood in the chamber so we can go through the rest of your body. Your heart is a muscle. Well, 2 of my leaflets were so filled with calcium and mineral deposits that they had quit functioning and were, in effect, let's say, welded together. And the third one was about ready to do the same. And that's why I didn't have blood pressure. And without blood pressure, your blood is not oxygenated. So when the blood like that goes into your brain, there's not enough life in it for your brain to tell your heart what to do. So my heart wasn't getting information from my brain to tell it to beat. That's why I had the heart block. This is what they've told me. So they needed to put in a new aorta valve. And I went shopping then for aorta valve. I went to one of our specialist hospitals and I found good information, but I was not pleased with everything. So some of our people here in the Separ Hills area really worked me over with Dr. Berkeley saying, well, this and this and this and this. So I said, let's get a second opinion. I went to another hospital, and there the second opinion, just to get the opportunity to do that, took an hour and a half discussion as I was queried all over the place, and they, you know, we'll see then what to do, and I could have open heart surgery where they crack your chest, have this valve put in, or I could be okay to have what's called a TAVR, T-A-V-R, trans-aorta valve replacement. It's a new process that's been in the U.S. for 2 years and in Europe for about 10. And so my present existence then was something to cry about, because while I had a pacemaker, had a valve that wasn't going to work very long at all. It gave me 6 months to 3 years with the pacemaker. So he said, well, he wanted me around longer than that, so I think I got at least 3 years to be with a woman. I hope so. So I went through their process of tests that I didn't know even existed. And this particular operation, because it's new, is very much controlled by the institutions of health. They're very careful about it. And they said, oh, we'll okay you for a TAVR procedure. So I was admitted to the hospital the day before and went through more tests. And over there at St. Joseph's, where I went through, they were very kind to me. I'm pleased to say that. It was a good visit. Good teams that worked with me or on me. Because it was sad to think that I only had a little while to live, even though I had a pacemaker. It was sad. The sign was in my heart. And I knew that unless something happened, I'd be putting on whatever God would give me or not give me in the near future. Now, the TAVR procedure requires five physicians. One's an anesthesiologist, and then four other physicians. Heart surgeons, chest surgeons, interventional surgeons. I don't even know what those are for sure. And this happens in what's called a hybrid operating room. And I don't know what that looks like either. But they tell me there were about 15 people in the room giving me this surgical procedure. Thankfully, I haven't seen the bill. But when they go through and give you this TAVR procedure, they give you slits on both sides of your groin, and they go up into your heart and replace or put on top of your current aorta valve one that's made out of cow. It's a bovine valve. And it's put in there by, it's collapsed in a stent, and then it's guided into position, and at the precise moment that it's in the right place, they expand it with a balloon. And then you have a new aorta valve, and it takes the calcifications and minerals that are on your old valve, those leaflets, plasters them, as it were, against the walls of the aorta, and it has to do that to work, and they are then part of your heart in a different way. They just grow into that position. And this new one takes over and starts doing the work. Now, there's some benefits to this if you get qualified, because if it ever goes bad, they say they can put another one in right on top of it. They don't know how long they last because they've only been doing it about 15 years experimentally, and it's been about that long that people have lived with it, and so it's pretty much a good deal. And if I'd had my chest operation to have that kind of replacement of the aorta valve, the new one would have been 10 centimeters, a millimeter. I hope I got that right. Because the new one, yeah, 10 millimeters. But the one that they were able to put into me through this TAVR process is 26 millimeters. So it's over twice as large, so that I'm getting more blood circulation. So for me to see this tent coming down, it'll come down sometime just like yours, but I don't know exactly when. But it's a marvelous operation. I don't think it's cheap. The valve itself costs $30,000. So that's why they really look you over to qualify you on Medicare. Now, the next verse 3 has to do with my third operation. After we've put it on, we won't be naked. Well, after they gave me the TAVR process procedure, the cut they had made on my right groin healed nicely, but the left one did not. That vein is right next to my bone. so it was a rather large cut. And it wasn't healing right. And so after about a week, they decided they would have to redo that wound. And so they put me in the hospital again for a long stay. And I think it was 4 or 5 days. And they cut away some flesh so that it could heal, because some of the flesh had started to die. I didn't have infection, but they put me through this process. And when they did that, they gave me a wound vac machine to use. Now this machine is something you put on and carry around. It weighs about, I'd say 7 or 8 pounds. It's battery operated and has a vacuum tube that goes into a sponge, and they cut the sponge to fit the wound. And they put an adhesiveness on your body, then put in this sponge gizmo, and then they put another adhesion on top of that so that you have something that's sealed, airtight, and it pulls the moisture and blood out of the wound so that the healing can take place. And because of the vacuum, it's drying it together. Now, there is a couple downsides to this. And there's two that they're difficult, but you've got to have them. One is that has to be changed routinely. That seal and all that stuff has to be taken off, and you get a lot of skin problems. They put stuff on your skin so that it heals or holds this vacuum. But you see, the place where they went in is right up there in your groin, right where your leg meets your abdomen. And so when they change that, you got to lay down and spread your legs with no clothes on. So you do this sometimes every day. 5 weeks. Different nurses come in, and you lay in the bed, and they take all your manliness, lay it over here, and hold it down with a hand. I'm sorry. And they commence to clean you up, and then take all that dressing off and cut a new sponge to make sure it fits. And they trim it up and put you back together and put on your shorts. So I know a lot about being naked. And the worst part is, well, it's the same worstness. It goes on for 5 weeks. 5 weeks. You go into the doctor's office every so often, and they check it, make sure it's everything's going right. When it isn't, they yell at you and da 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 da. And that made me realize, as I laid there naked enough, that God really sees everything about me. I am absolutely naked before God. He knows everything that goes on up here. And you need to remember that in your life. Your past is very important. It becomes a record. So be very careful about your past. If everything is jotted down, you want to make sure that the jots are as small and insignificant and few as possible, because you're naked before Him. Just as I was naked before, 30 or 40 different nurses. I lucked out a couple times and got guys. Other than that, it was women. And this goes through your mind. So I know a lot about being naked, and I want you to remember that you're naked before God. There's going to be a time when you won't be naked. How long is church supposed to go? Any time? Come on. Just turn to page 2 and I got 5. This is the longest I've spoken. Amazing. Thank you for your prayers. So verse 4 says, while we are in this tent, we sought. We feel distressed because we don't want to take off the tent. But we do want to put on the eternal house. Then the eternal life will put an end to our mortal existence. God has prepared us for this and has given us His Spirit to guarantee it. God has guaranteed to you who are baptized that He'll see you through, just as the first message was about. And if you're pursuing baptism, realize that that is your guarantee. When He gives you His Spirit, that is your guarantee. Verse 6, so we are always confident. We know that as long as we are living in these bodies, we are living away from the Lord. Indeed, our lives are guided by faith, not by sight. We are confident, and we prefer to live away from this body and to live with the Lord. Whether we live in the body or move out of it, our goal is to be pleasing to Him. All of us must appear in front of Christ's judgment seat. It doesn't leave any of us out. No person ever born is left out. We all will be in front of Christ's judgment seat. And it's comforting to know you can be there with the guarantee. Then all people will receive what they deserve for the good or evil they have done while living in their bodies, while their tent has been erected. So start each day with etiquette, with modesty, with God, with the attributes that we have been talking about. You that are younger, some of the design things that we've been talking about in our classes. Be wholesome before God. Start each day with kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You find that in Ephesians, I believe I had 5, verse 16. See, your purpose is to be part of the family of God. You've been created to become a brother, a relative of Christ. We are shaped so we will serve God. And you then have that mission. found a quote from Vince Lombardi. You want to hear an old football mind at work on this? Because you are working on perfection. He said, perfection is not attainable. And I grant, he's right. You'll never be perfect. But, he says, if you chase perfection, we can catch excellence. If we chase perfection, we can catch excellence. So as my 3 points to you are, live each day as if it's your last. Make sure that you find that that's the opportunity. Realize you're naked before God. And start right, so you can end it right. It's a pleasure to be back in your company. You're a good group of people to pastor. Some of you present challenges I've never seen before, and you help me grow. There's none of us that are typical. We're not yellow pencils. We're all individuals. And it's wonderful to be able to work with you as your pastor. I'm trying to get back into that slot very clearly. It's good to be with you. I wish you peace through the rest of